live from Tornado Alley. This is the Asylum Fantasy Football Podcast.
Yes, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. You can find us at asylumfantasyfootball.com.
We are more than likely going to go off the air at any moment as the sky is falling in western Pennsylvania for the second straight day as I enter day two of having no power. How do you like sitting beside me today, Rick?
Yeah, you smell. That's all right. But, yeah, thanks for joining us. And find us on iTunes. Our new feed there is already moving up pretty good.
Really
appreciate it.
Pretty good. It stinks. So get on there. Give us a 5-star rating. Throw out a
Follow
us. A shout out. Do something for us, please.
Yeah, follow us. Give us a rating. Throw us a comment our way. You know, we appreciate it. Drop us a line at asylumfootball@gmail.com.
All right. Well, we got a big show. We're going to do our running backs ratings extravaganza today. So we'll get right to it. Made a promise to some guys in the search of 600 followers on Twitter the other day. Promise to mention a few guys. Our lucky 600th tweeter is @FFGator. You can find him at FFGator.com, an awesome site. Check him out. Also want to mention @CaptainComeback, @PunchLebeck, and @FFRIddle. Follow those guys. New friends of the Asylum.
Yes, indeed. And in studio with us, calling in is our good friend, Mr. Dennis Farrell from the Fantasy Sideline Show. Dennis, glad to have you in the Asylum.
Guys, first-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, first-time caller's true anyhow. So, Dennis, checking out the show, you're just tearing up the charts on iTunes. What all do you have going on at the sideline these days?
You know what? We're lucky because we have got great guys like you, Fantasy Football Junkie on Twitter. We're lucky that we have great people, a support system to help us move up, and we got to help each other. And I help you, you help me, we all move up, and there's enough room at the top. And Fantasy Football rankings, man, that's kind of where the money is right now.
Absolutely. We're still looking for it, but we're going to find some of it. So let's dive in. I think how we're going to go about it, we'll go ahead and have Rick reveal his rankings. I'll argue with him. I will tell you, as I did this in the dark last night with no power out in the middle of the...
Save the Abe Lincoln stories with the candle and all this.
I'm basically Amish. This is the Amish Fantasy Football Radio Show tonight. But so here's what I did. I've done a lot of research lately, put together the numbers, game logs, did everything else. When it came time to do my ranking, Rick, I balled them up, threw them on the floor, and went with my gut because I think that's how we have to do this.
Well, that's always part of fantasy football. There's no doubt about it. Of course, mine is through hard work and bigger gut.
Yeah, a rather robust gut, one may say. So let's jump off right now. A situation we're facing in the in an upcoming draft. What is it? The FA. I can't remember what that draft's called. We're going to be in. Do you remember what it's called? As you look at me in disgust, apparently not. But we have the first pick, and we're already arguing, Rick.
It's the President's League.
The President's League. There it is. Check that out. You're going to want to be a part of that. But we have the first pick in that draft, and we already vehemently disagree on what to do with that pick.
Yeah, we do. But, we have plenty of time to fight and scratch over that. So, without further ado, let's look at some fantasy running backs.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
and
you have it number one.
I have it number one. Running back is Arian Foster.
Wrong. The number one running back, my friend, is LeSean McCoy with a bullet.
I'm afraid he's not. I'm afraid he's not.
Wow. You disagree. Am I speaking out of turn?
I got to say, guys, I don't think any of us agree because I'm saying Ray Rice.
There you go.
All right. A three-way play.
It's like a clown at a circus juggling three balls, and one of them's Foster, the other's McCoy, and the other one's Rice.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So I'm looking at it, Rick. We will throw some numbers into this. By and large, most people, most experts, I'm doing the air quotes now, have Foster at number one easily. You look at his number. Now, I understand he missed games, but I believe that's something you have to factor in. Last year, 1,200 yards, 1,224 to be exact, 10 TDs. Now, great coming out of the backfield, catching the ball, 53 catches, 600 yards, and 2 TDs. Match up that with LeSean McCoy's. He's averaging more per carry. He put up 1,300 yards, 17 TDs, and a very respectable 315 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns. I don't understand how Foster is so clearly the number one back to everyone.
You know,
It's one guy here, one guy sitting beside me, another guy on the line. And we said Foster, McCoy, and Rice. I don't think Foster is clearly number one. I don't think McCoy is clearly number one. I don't think Rice is. However, in my mind, if I had that choice, I would be taking Arian Foster.
So, Dennis, break us up here. Where is it with Rice that you see him coming in over those two?
First, let me ask a question about McCoy, and I don't have the numbers since I'm on my Griswold family vacation right now, but what was Sean McCoy's numbers when Mike Vick was in the game playing? Because I really think Mike Vick is going to be the X factor. McCoy had a breakout year, an amazing season without Michael Vick for most of that year.
Yeah.
Bringing Michael Vick back, I think that really hurts McCoy's numbers this year, and let's assume that maybe Michael Vick can stay healthy. He's bound to on accident at least once. That will cut in. And that's where I'm wondering what McCoy's value is. That's my only knock on McCoy is what will Mike Vick X factor be to McCoy's numbers?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. Are we going to agree? Do we think Mike Vick will remain healthy? Does he come back to his form 2 years ago, or is the Mike Vick we got last year? You know, that's the problem with Mike Vick. You never know what you're going to get.
Would it be fair to say that you could wonder the same about Arian Foster with Mike Vick's health? They're both tied hand in hand with injury concerns.
Yeah, absolutely, and that may be my biggest problem with Foster is the injury concern. Him, like McFadden, who I'm sure we'll get to later, you could almost write down the fact that he's going to miss three games minimum, if not 4 to 6.
I know Arian Foster missed 3 games last year. He played 16 the year before that. He had 1,600 yards in the 16-game season, the 1,224 yards in the 13-game season. Yeah, he's been pretty consistent the last couple of years. Yeah, I think they're all injury concern. Probably Rice is probably the safest bet if you're nitpicking through injury concerns.
You're probably right.
Go ahead.
And you hit it on the head. That's why I like Ray Rice, is because there's no questions with him. You know what I would take, and this is a big question I love to ask everybody, is what kind of point differential would you take for peace of mind? Would you take 50 points less season for peace of mind to know that you're going to have a guy that can lead the league in rushing if everything goes right, can catch the ball in PPR league, who won't get hurt, who is a major part of the offense? I agree. Arian Foster is a home run guy. Arian Foster is the most talented guy. Arian Foster has the biggest question mark out of the three, though.
Yeah, and, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. You know, when you talk about Ray Rice, as Rick beside me knows, I've had Ray Rice probably 3 times in the last 5 years. I love the guy. And, I think we're spending a lot of time between these three.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. I mean, quite frankly, I think they're in the top three, and they're very close, and I wouldn't have any argument wherever they were picked.
So I think the big question becomes, Rick, and rather than just go to, or Rick, I'm sorry, Dennis, rather than go through these rankings, we'll just sort of hit on some players. I think maybe the biggest question out there now is after those top three, whatever order you want to take them, it's hard to make a good argument against any of them. Who is that fourth running back, and where is the value at in taking it?
Oh, the fourth running back. I think for fourth, there's a 4A and 4B. It's going to be between Chris Johnson and McFadden. I think this is the year McFadden gets his act together. McFadden is a home run hitter. I like McFadden more than I like Chris Johnson, and I really think I'm not concerned about McFadden's injuries this season.
You're not concerned about his injuries?
You know what? Just like Arian Foster, look at McFadden's points. He went out early in week 7, couldn't get it back together the rest of the season, but if you look at the years after that, he's had nickel and dime injuries. He's looking good. And listen, it's an assumption and a gut feeling. I'll give you that, but I really think this is the year McFadden puts it all together.
Yeah, and I hope so. And I think he's shown, and it's the most frustrating part about him. When healthy, I think you'd make an argument that he belongs in that top three amongst them if he's not on top of that pile.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right with you there. I'm very high on Chris Johnson this year. I've got him number 4. I think he's going to return back to form. A lot of guys saying, oh, he's lost a step. I'm not buying it. I think, you know, he's not old, and he's coming back. And 2,000 yards, probably not. But it's a fourth running back. I don't see where 1,400, 1,500 yards is out of his reach by any stretch.
I think Chris Johnson's value is the lack of value in everybody else behind him. Chris, you kind of know what you're going to get. Like you said, water seems stone level, kind of what you saw last year. You can give him slight bump up. As much as people complained about him, he was still a 1,000-yard running back last year.
Yeah, and I think without that backup, without Michael Bush, too, I wondered how much more of that offense goes through. Now you're looking goal line carries. We'll have to see how Cam shakes out. You don't see any major plans for those to bring any of those seven guys named Steve that are behind him in the lineup coming in, sniping any carries. Again, it's the injury concern, the inability to stay healthy. And once again, maybe a better passing game with Carson Ballmer being there for an entire year takes some of the load off of Darren McFadden. I mean, to be honest, I have him down at 9, but again, based simply on the injury concerns.
That's it. And you know what? Is it fair to say Darren McFadden is just as injured as Arian Foster? And if so, why the big rankings drop between the two?
You know, it's a fair point. No question about it. I hadn't thought of it that way, but we still rank Foster up in that top three, and I do have the same amount of injury concerns. So.
Well, I'll kind of weigh in on that. 2 years ago, Foster played 16 games. He did miss the three last year. But if you look at McFadden, last year he missed 9 games. The year before that, he missed 3 games. The year before that, he missed 4 games. The year before that, he missed 3 games. He has a real long history of it, whereas Foster, you know, people saying, okay, he had a hammy last year for 3 games, but he still did good. You know, he doesn't have that history of year after year after year just killing you.
You know what? I kind of disagree. If you go back and look at the injury report for Arian Foster, he was always nickel and dime. He played, but you look at the carries per game back in, he had a light workload back in the early days, too. Every year there's always been something wrong. When he came out of the preseason, was it early in the preseason? Wasn't this 2 years ago? He didn't play the whole preseason? Something like that. He has that same injury concern. He might play through him more than McFadden. But, you know, if you guys ever get time, look through his carries in the past game loss.
Yeah, I think no question about it. And moving on from McFadden, a guy I have is fourth, and not a very popular opinion, I don't think. And again, I don't have a lot to back it up outside of gut and watching him play. Another injury concern, but the kid runs hard. He's real dynamic. I actually have Ryan Matthews up at number 4. I drank the Kool-Aid 2 years ago and got burned on it. Avoid him last year, kind of got burned on it. And I can give you nothing more than to say I'm feeling Matthews this year.
I can't argue with gut feeling, but on the flip side, you know what, Ryan Matthews is going to be my Matt Ryan, where I have to see it now. You know, on the potential for 2 years straight. Oh, he's not showing me anything. I would rather be the first off the bus than the last one to be stuck with him.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I have to. I can't go that high. I have him ranked pretty high. I got him at 7th. Simply because I can't put a lot of guys ahead of him just because of the talent. But I'm very squeamish about taking him very high because I do want to see something out of him. And he scares me to death, to be honest with you.
I mean, if you guys think about it, who would you, standardly, would you rather have a Ryan Matthews or a Matt Forte?
I'll tell you what, I put them about on the same plane. You know, Forte has shown it time and time again, but in a PPR league, maybe Forte, but I think I like Matthews better when you talk a standard league, a standard redraft. I mean, those guys are real close. You know, I have them together. You know, I'm worried about the Michael Bush situation in Chicago. I don't think you bring a guy in, give him that kind of money without giving him some carries. I guess the debate comes, does that help or hurt Forte? But I just, from what I've seen of Forte, what I like about Matthews is more than anything, it's so rare these days, we talk about it so often. Tolbert's gone, he's going to be the whole show in San Diego. If he holds up, that offense is almost going to run entirely through him.
Yeah, if he holds up, yeah, there's no question. And, you know, and who would you rather want? I got, the last ADP numbers that I've seen, I got them today, but in standard and in PPR, Ryan Matthews is fourth in running backs and Forte is eighth. So, I guess, as far as that goes, there's not a whole lot of shift between the two different scoring systems. I myself like Forte a little better. I got him ranked fifth, and I got Matthews ranked seventh.
Here's my question about Matthews. If he could not hold up sharing carries with Tolbert, what makes you think he can hold up with the majority of carries?
Again, fair point. I'm taking a leap of faith, like with Darren McFadden, like with Arian Foster. It's the frustrating thing
with that.
Go ahead.
I can't complain with that. You know what? Faith. If you have faith on the guy, you can't be talked out of him.
Yeah, and that's it. I guess the question becomes, we talk about these three guys, maybe we move MJD. Maybe before I ask this next question, with the MJD holdup, this is a guy that can be argued anywhere in that 4-8 range as well, I think. I personally have fears of him breaking down with these ridiculous amounts of carries and touches he gets every year. But how long does this holdout have to go on before he really starts falling down your draft order? Do you not subscribe to that theory?
You know what? I subscribe to the curse of the 300 carries. You look all the running backs who get over 300 carries, they break down so much faster. It seems the magic number. And he's already had knee surgery, knee injuries. I'm okay. You can have him. I'm going to skip him.
Yeah, I'm the same way. He's tumbling on mine right now. I mean, with this holdout, every day out of camp to me. And we've seen it too many times. Of course, Chris Johnson's fresh in everybody's memory, even though he's a 1,000-yard rusher last year, as far from being an elite back. And, of course, we saw Steven Jackson, I don't know what it was, about 4 or 5 years ago now when he had that holdout and what happened to him. The longer he holds out, the farther he goes on my list, there's no doubt about it. I have an eighth right now, but it's just more or less because he's Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, so I think the next question is, let's put that group together with Forte, with MJD, with Matthews, with Chris Johnson. All these question marks, it's been the million-dollar question. So you have your top three going the first three or four picks, deciding unless somebody wants to jump up and take Rodgers or even a Megatron. How long are you waiting in the first round? If you're sitting, let's say, 6, 7, 8, 9, are you taking one of these guys, or are you going with a more sure thing at the quarterback or the receiver position?
I will tell you what my draft strategy is, and I've given so many people heart attacks over this. Is if I don't have a first three or four pick, I'm not going to even look at taking a running back until the fourth round.
Yeah, we saw that. I believe it was the sixth round, Mr. Roy Helou.
Hey, we all make mistakes. But you look at, I can admit it. It was a mess.
All right, looks like Dennis hit a bad area there, so we'll keep the show going until we hear back
right
from
back
him.
Here.
Yeah, we'll check it out. But so let's move on from there. I think
we'll
have...
just kind of do a rundown. I'm not sure. Okay, I had Forte at 5.
Uh-huh.
I got McFadden at 6. I got Matthews 7, and then I kind of ended with MJD at 8.
And we're pretty close. Here's the name I have that you don't have that I think I'm going crazy because, like I said, if you're listening out there, you guys in the chat room, can assail me if you want. Again, I get it from gut. My feeling is I put Jamaal Charles at 5, in that 5-6 range. I'm buying into it. I know he's coming off the injury. My argument for Charles is going to be he's a year off of that injury, almost a full year. He's healthy. Maybe he lost a step. Maybe that injury causes you to lose a step. I think he had a half a step to lose. So, I'm buying into Charles. I don't know where you have him. I don't know what everybody thinks. I'm not real fearful of Hillis. Yeah, Hillis is going to take some goal line carries. I like Charles' ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. This is a dynamic player who I trust is going to be healthy. And with that offense, with the Matt Castle problem that Kansas City has, I like Charles, the offense running through Jamaal Charles.
I like Jamaal Charles, too. I don't have him quite as high as 5, obviously. I've got him at 10. No, I don't fear Peyton Hillis either. I mean, I was a proponent just a couple years ago of him and Jones. You know, I mean, they rushed about 2,700 yards between the two of them. And
you know, there's plenty of yards out there, you know, even if you want to spell Charles a little bit and get Hillis in there. And I agree 100%. Charles is great out of the backfield. He's a dynamic player. And like I said, I have him at 10, just not quite as high. I'm a little more leery of a knee injury than you are. But I think it was early enough. It's been, you know, almost a full year. So we're okay.
All right. Well, it looks like we have Dennis coming back on. Dennis, we got you there.
Oh, man, I'm in the middle of the woods somewhere, so it's okay.
It's the rough and wild central Michigan, we understand. So we're going to jump on. We talked, well, let's get your thoughts. I'm a guy, I've got Jamal Charles, in most people's opinion, ranked way too high. Got him up at number 5, actually. I don't know if you heard. I like him. He's a year removed from that injury. I think he's that dynamic of a player.
You know what? On the flip side, I really love Peyton Hillis this year. Just because he's coming back from the ACL, I really do believe they're going to take their time with giving Charles the full load. And even if that's, you know, week 4, week 5, I have 50-50 carries. Peyton Hillis can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can play fullback. Peyton Hillis will get, I believe Peyton Hillis will get the ball within the 20s, which will cut so much into Jamal Charles' value.
You know, and I think, and I hear this a lot with Hillis, and you like his size, you like his running ability, even has the ability to catch the ball, and he's an absolute beast at the goal line. My issue is, and maybe the same argument can be made against Charles, I only saw it for 1 year. I mean, last year coming off the injuries, and I don't know what was going on in Cleveland, that deal last year, he's blowing off kids at the Children's Hospital. You know, we all know how Rick over here feels about Peyton Hillis. He hates his face, I believe, was a term he used one time. So I don't know how much I buy into Hillis. There's a lot of hype for him. I'm not sure that I see it. I haven't seen the body of work yet.
You know, I think what it is a new attitude, a new venue. Kansas City is an upgrade over Cleveland. Cleveland was never going to win anything. And you know what? Everybody's entitled to their 1 year where they want to act like Lindsay Lohan. He got it out of the system. Let's go back to work.
Like Lindsay Lohan. That's a fantastic comparison. Peyton Hillis and Lindsay Lohan.
Does he get collagen injections in his lips too, or what?
Maybe falling out at parties, and what would he miss a game to go get married?
Yeah, and his agent tells him he shouldn't play. May not be healthy enough to play. I love that one.
Oh, it was a Madden curse, maybe.
Yeah, blame Madden. So let's talk about the other hot topic, injury wise, coming into the season. Where do you see Adrian Peterson falling, and where would you be comfortable picking him up?
Did we lose him again?
All right, I think we lost him again. All right, Rick, that question's for you.
Well, Adrian Peterson, I have him right now. I have him at 11, hoping that his value will pick up, you know, after about the first couple games of the year. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready. We'll have to monitor him through camp and preseason, of course. Everything that we've heard, the knee's been rehabbing pretty good. I don't think they're going to rush him in. You know, kind of dubiously at 11, but it's hard to throw him down a whole lot farther.
Yeah, and I mean, look, here's my issue with it. Again, if you're talking right now, that ranking, I actually have him at 10, that ranking's way too high. If you assume he's going to start on the PUP list. First of all, I don't assume that. They're saying it, you hear conflicting reports. The guy's an absolute beast. He reminds you of Jerry Rice, you know, his workout regimen and the kind of shape he was in. This guy's a robot. He is not a human being. But even on the PUP list, if he comes back week 3, week 4 healthy, I think he vaults up, assuming he's healthy, into a top 3 running back. So I think it's just if you're averaging it out. So I guess the question becomes, where are you comfortable drafting him?
Well, that's the key. And you know, and I've heard a lot of people talking, if he doesn't start off right away, you know, of course, Toby Gerhardt's going to be getting a lot of the work. And there's a lot of value on him early on. My question is, you know, if AP comes back like AP does, you know, Toby Gerhardt goes away. And that's what I'm afraid of that way. But as far as getting him, like I said, I've got him ranked 11 right now. So I'll just have to monitor him. I can change my mind. I have plenty of time.
You're not supposed to do that. So, Dennis, if you're sitting, I'm thinking if I'm sitting maybe towards the turn, heading into the early third round. I think I take that chance on Adrian Peterson. Where do you stand on that?
I think I'm with you. It depends on, you know, who may have flipped, who's left. You guys hit it right on the head. It's the pup list. And look what happened to Chris Johnson, and he was healthy, and he missed training camp. And you tell me Adrian Peterson misses three games, that's three games gone. And people forget, fantasy football isn't 17 weeks. You got to take 4 weeks out of that because that's the playoffs. You're assuming you're getting in there. And then you take three games out of that, assuming, you know, Peterson misses those, and maybe one more game as conditioning, half carries, maybe they ease the workload on them. So you might get Peterson for five or six games tops in a whole fantasy football season.
Yeah, definitely a concern. And again, I think, like Rick said, you're going to have to watch through camp, see if he starts out on that pup list. I think if he starts on the active roster, he shoots way up for me. I don't think they're going to rush him. He's got a few good years left on his career. But even on the pup list, all right, let's say he starts and you're getting those five or six games. How far does he have to fall before you go after him, or do you avoid him altogether?
Third round. Anywhere in the third round, the beginning, middle, or end of the third round, I'll gamble.
Okay. Oh, here's one guy that I want, you know, we're kind of going through the rankings, and I've got in the top 10. I got him at number 9 as the official running back of the asylum, DeMarco Murray.
Oh, he is official nothing.
No, I like DeMarco Murray. I think, coming off that broken ankle and no ligament damage, nothing like that, and he's in good shape. And I have him in the top 10. I think Dallas is going to be a very potent offense.
The only knock right now is their schedule, and they have a pretty hard schedule this season. But you know what? I'd take DeMarco Murray over Forte. I'd take DeMarco Murray over Peterson. I could see DeMarco Murray being a top 7 running back.
Again, I think I go back. I have around that area. I think that's fair value. Actually, I have him at 13, so you can make an argument in standard leagues. I have him as an RB2. Kind of the same point I made with Peyton Hillis, and especially with a guy like Murray. I've seen what he played all of 7, 8, 9 games, went out with the injury. Is it a fluke? Can they prepare for him? I'd be afraid to have him even as a low-end RB1 just for the case that I haven't seen enough of him yet.
You know what? You look back at the body of work at Dallas running backs, and probably over the last 6 or 7 years, they've all been successful. And you know what? I'm willing to say I'll use that as his body of work.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think you can definitely go with that. So let's move off him. We don't want to spend a lot of time. Here's a guy I'm interested on, and I have him as an RB2, top 20 kind of guy. Loving where he shows up. Is Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the law firm, heading to Cincinnati, going to be seeing all of those carries, seeing the bulk of them? A guy not known to fumble. I see him fitting right into that Cedric Benson role, with right at 100 yards, and a touchdown every week, being a steady kind of guy. You see him a lot lower in other places. How do you feel about the law firm?
I feel like Captain Negative here right now, but I don't like him. I just like DeMarco Murray, you never truly got to see his body of work as a Patriot. He was limited to like 5 or 6 carries a game. Occasionally he would break some, but he kind of looked like Lawrence Maroney, where Lawrence had some great games as a Patriot, goes over to Denver, and now he's working at McDonald's.
Is that a fact? Do you know that?
I do, yeah. We just stopped there, and he was very nice, very cordial. We got our hot apple pie, and we went on and wished him luck.
So he's working at a McDonald's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That's interesting.
You never know where these guys will pop up.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's interesting. On the surface, I look at him like it is an RB3, but then you look, he's walking into a situation where they've had success running, with Benson in the past, and he's going to be the man. The only question really in my mind is, can he hold up to a full workload? And if he does, I think he's going to be a very productive back. RB2 probably, but that's fine with me. I think he's going to be okay if he can wear bear the brunt of the load, and that's kind of what you're saying there. He doesn't have the body of work, so we don't know if he can stand up to it.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Are we assuming the Jarvis Green Oaks will be successful based on what Cedric Benson has done? They're two different running backs. You bring in – Benson was straight up the middle, but Jarvis likes to cut and dance and hop around. I just wonder that everybody says, look, Benson's been a 1,000-yard running back. You can throw anybody into that system, they'll be successful, but can you?
Yeah, I don't know. Here's what I do know. Let's say health-wise he can hold up. We talked about this in previous shows, Rick. Bernard Scott's been there. They don't want to give him the ball. This guy's had so many chances over and over again. You know, at least out of the gate, and I think that's where the success is going to be determined, out of the gate it's all going to run through the law firm. Because for whatever reason, I don't know if he can't pass block, I don't know what it is, but Bernard Scott can't supplant anybody they bring in there.
Good Lord, for a slave back to phone.
I think we're losing again here.
I'm praying for Scott.
Oh, okay.
Praying for him.
So we'll do that.
I'd love to see Scott be successful, but I just don't know if either one of them two. This could be the year they say, hey, look how successful we were with the pass. A.J. Green was great, you know. Maybe they transitioned to a little more of the passing game.
I do not see Bernard Scott doing much of anything, quite frankly. I he's had too many chances, you know, especially when Benson was hurt. He just a horrible yard per carry, and he just never seems to take that step. And, he's just going to be riding the pine the rest of his career, I think. That's just my personal thing until I see him really, you know, mature into a real running back. But, this is where it gets interesting down in here. I mean, we can argue all about the Fosters and McCoys, but these are the ones, if you can pick that nugget that's the good value, is it going to be the law firm? Is it going to be Fred Jackson? I think Fred Jackson is going to be able to be a good value this year. I like him. I know he's on the other side of 30, but he's coming back from a broken bone. But he had a career year ago, and he seems to be working hard and in good shape. How do you think about him?
Oh, I love Fred Jackson. Fred Jackson, I think when he went out with the leg injury, was a top three fantasy running back at that point. He's coming back. His leg looks good. I really think he can continue. I know he's, 31, 32 now, but that whole offense is built around him. I really think Fred Jackson comes back and continues where he left off.
Any fears with the success, limited as it may have been, that C.J. Spiller had towards the end of the year, that he cuts into that workload that Jackson, I mean, that entire offense was running through Jackson for a lot of last season before he went down?
You know what? I think you saw a little glimpse of what they might have in play when they started lining him up at wide receiver to get C.J. Spiller on the field. I really think you're going to see a lot more of that C.J. Spiller as a wide receiver this year.
Yeah, impossible, and they talked about that, working him into the slot, so hopefully that works out. Well, exciting news, Rick. We'll go ahead and take it. We have a call on hold, so apparently one other person outside of you and I and Dennis is interested in this show tonight, so area code 773. How's it going tonight? Uh-oh, I think area code 773 fell asleep. Are you out there?
Mom?
Is it your mom? Did she fall asleep?
It might have been my mom calling it, told me I did a good job. Love you, Mom.
All right. Well, Dennis will call you when they get up to the cabin there. So we'll move on. We'll move on from there. I think another guy, a hot topic. We have him ranked about the same place. What do you make of the talk of Michael Turner's carries going down and then wanting to work Jaquizz Rodgers into the offense a little bit more? Does Turner fall completely off your board? Does he fall to an RB2-3? How do you see this Michael Turner situation shaking out?
How many years now have we heard Michael Turner's going to be done? Last year it was, oh, another committee, they're going to air it out, it's the new Saints offense. The year before, oh my gosh, he's just losing a step. This year, Rodgers is going to step in. Look, they still have Snelling. Somehow, he still runs for 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. Look, that's what he does again this year. And somehow, he's fallen to the third and fourth round. That's disrespect right there, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Here's a guy who's done it again and again. And you get the argument. We had the discussion with MJD for a couple years there, well over that 300 carry mark due to injuries and some other things. I believe he stayed below that last year, stayed right around it. There's mixing cuts and bruises here last year, but has managed to stay healthy. And look, I know he's gone over that 30 mark, but for how many years did he sit behind LaDainian Tomlinson? So I think, again, when he's falling that third or fourth round, when you're talking Bayou picks, there's a guy I'm targeting this year.
Yeah, there's one thing to look at, you know, the talk of Michael Turner losing work and everything. But when it gets right down to it, and I don't know if this is a fair question and how someone would react to it, but would you rather have Michael Turner, who seems to be healthy, or would you rather have, say, in the same situation, in Ahmad Bradshaw, who you know has feet problems, and you're not really sure how many games he might play as well. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're right in the same tier there. And I think just looking at the numbers with the touchdowns that Turner puts up, and obviously he's not going to catch any passes. We all know that. But he just rumbles for yards and scores touchdowns, and I think he's going to be a good value.
Give me Michael Turner every day of the week over Bradshaw. Bradshaw is injury-prone. And I, you know what, if Michael Turner has a bad day and gets 5 fantasy points, that's 5 more fantasy points than an injured Bradshaw who's sitting on the bench and David Wilson maybe steal his job.
Exactly. So another name, I think a hot topic this year, I see him taking as high as 11 and 12 or 13 in mock drafts. I'm not sure where I'm at with him. Didn't follow him a whole lot in college, saw him play, but Trent Richardson, going to Cleveland, being a rookie, the offense obviously going to focus on him. Where do you see Trent Richardson fall?
That's a good question. You know, and I asked this question a couple weeks ago, is other than Peyton Hillis' one breakout season, can you name me one Cleveland Brown fantasy running back who's been successful?
Jim Brown.
I don't think anybody was playing fantasy. Can we get through one damn episode without you bringing up Jim Brown?
That's no. BFF, man.
I'm telling you, it's 1963 perpetually to this guy.
Hey, he's the all-time fantasy scorer. I mean, we already did the career numbers the guy's off.
But he's not relevant now. He's just not.
I know.
So
no, you're right. You're right. It's terrible. I mean, and you know, Peyton Hillis had that one year a couple years ago. And I like Trent Richardson. I'm not, you know, prepared to jump ship on him. However, I'm not going to jump on board either. I've got him right now at number 19 on my running back list, which I think is, you know, pretty normal. I would consider him a low RB2.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have Richardson. I don't think, though, I don't know about you, I'm not willing to spend that lower first-round, early second-round pick on him.
Here's the thing. A lot of experts are having him at, like, eighth overall in running backs and going in the first round. I like where you guys have him. It's more realistic. It's safe. And this is good. This is the year where safe.
Yeah, no question about that. I think another guy, Rick, I find here's a guy I'm really high on. We tend to really agree. I have almost as a low end one. High too after the way he performed last year in that run heavy offense with bringing Peyton Manning in. Maybe I'm overshooting the runway here a little bit, but Willis McGahee, I'm starting to fall into a little bit of man love with.
I can't go that deep into that. I've got him down maybe lower than he should be, just basically on fear of that year last year is not going to last, especially with Peyton Manning there. I don't know. I mean, he's set up to succeed. There's no doubt. But I guess I'm afraid of his injury, where some of these other guys, I'm not quite as afraid.
Yeah, and he's been up and down in his career. He's had some big years. He's had some down years. I think let's play a game, a little bit of a game here. If you have to pick one, two guys I'm really high on, you have him and you have Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush, another guy I'm high on. When we talked to Patrick Johnson, real high on Reggie Bush in Miami. If you had to pick between those two, I think that's sort of a tier we're looking at. Which one are you more comfortable with?
I have Reggie Bush ranked higher. Dennis, how about you?
Dennis isn't there. So
okay, we
do have another call. Let's jump to that. Area code 248. Maybe this is Dennis's mother-in-law or something.
Could
area
be.
Code 248. How you doing tonight?
Hey, No, no, it's Dennis's mother-in-law.
Oh, it is. All right. You changed numbers on us.
You know what? My wife has an iPhone that has full signal. I have a Sprint phone that has, like, -4 signal, so we're good now.
I think it can go into the negative. When you live out in the boondocks like us here, they all go into the negative.
You know, being in Michigan, a lot of things have gone wrong. You got the Lions have gone backwards, 7 arrests, and, you know, I heard this year the Lions throwback jerseys will include stripes.
Yeah, I've heard that joke.
Well, I think they should. Well, you talk about a mess up there. Let's go ahead and talk about that a little bit. Is it institutional control? What is it? That team's got so much promise, finally broke out a little bit last year, had so much talent. Is this the kind of thing that's going to tear them apart and hold them back? Well, what in God's name is going on up there?
Well, I heard the league also mandated Matthew Stafford into having to blow into a breathalyzer machine at the start of every drive.
Probably not a bad idea. Let's just hope we keep Calvin Johnson off the sauce. So,
hey, listen, you know, it's the bad news today for Jahvid Best, who, you know, is not cleared. He'll start the season on the PUP list. You could just mark Jahvid Best off your draft boards, guys. He is going to be a wreck this season.
Yeah, so how do you see the running back situation shaping up in Detroit? Is it Michael Ashore who's been in all kinds of trouble? Is it Kevin Smith? Who are we looking at?
LeSure is going to miss 2 games, I believe, with his suspension. Kevin Smith has always been injury prone with bad ankles. Cedric Benson may be the guy that goes there. I think it's either New England with them releasing Joseph Addai, who scratch him off your draft boards too. Cedric Benson will either be a Lion or a Patriot. That's how I think it'll end up. And then I would love Cedric Benson as a Lion, not so much as a Patriot.
You think he sees enough carries in that offense, or do they sort of go to more of a New England offense where, you know, is there fantasy value there outside of maybe a bye week replacement?
You know what? I think he'd be a top 20 running back. He'd be a safe bet. I mean, you look at how successful Kevin Smith was at the end of the season when he was healthy. Jahvid Best was a home run hitter. Granted, he could also catch the ball. And Cedric Benson is older, had some off-the-field problems in the past, but he's always been a 1,000-yard running back. He's consistent, and I think that's what the Lions need right now, the running back is consistency.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, considering that mess they've had in the last couple of years, I mean, with the injuries, concussions, and, you know, arrest records and everything else, they need something. Not to say that Cedric Benson's a poster child by any means, but if he gets in at least in a camp and starts playing football, he seems to, last few years anyway, been really steady, and that's exactly what they need. You're right. Speaking of people with arrest records, if you had to draft right now and then without knowing how it's going to shake out, how far has Marshawn Lynch fallen on your draft list at this point? And maybe where was he to begin with, and where has he fallen to?
Well, this is what, his third offense now? I think he had a shotgun and maybe a marijuana offense the year before, so he's kind of tic-tac-toeing his offenses. I got to see what happens. Does the league come down on him? How many games does he miss? Goodell drops the hammer so hard sometimes and so easy other times, it's hard to tell. If Marshawn Lynch misses more than 3 games, it won't take him any earlier than the 3rd round.
Yeah, and especially, you know, getting 3-4 games. And I think it has to be 3 or 4 games. Like you said, at least his 3rd offense, too. I know the gun offense and the most recent DUI, and I, like you, I feel like there's something else. I can't think of it off the top of my head. I don't know if anybody in the chat room knows for sure. I can look it up for us. But here's a guy I was targeting, you know, down, you know, in a top 12 to 15 sort of range. I wasn't as high on him. I don't think he was going to maintain the torrid pace he was on at the end of last year. But a guy who was going to be a top-tier kind of back and just messes up again.
You know one name you guys have messed up, but left off the list that could be a top 12 running back? I know I jumped around, but Frank Gore, guys, is one guy everybody's forgetting about. And he could be one of those guys that becomes more successful with the subtraction of carries will meet the addition of yards.
Yeah, you know, he kind of rolls in Yeah, there's three guys that kind of roll into that same mold to me, and that's Frank Gore, Michael Turner, and Steven Jackson. There's those out there that are ready to write them off. And, you know, some for Gore, some Turner, some Jackson, you know, some all three, whatever. But, you know, there's three quality backs right there that are basically getting, you know, put out the pasture before they're ready to go, I think.
They're getting no respect. Frank Gore is average, I think, like 4.3, 4.4 yards per carry. Last season, he had 11 20-plus games. He can break it big. His only problem is he breaks down, and he's been the only guy on that offense that ever did anything before, you know, Davis came along. So I really think you put a team around him, you keep him fresh, you take some carries off of him. He can return to top 12, top 10 running back status just because he's going to be healthy and refreshed.
Yeah, it's possible. I think the biggest fear with him, there's so many guys there. They like Hunter. You sign Jacobs to fair money. It's such a crowded backfield. I fear how much do they cut into his carries. When you talk about a guy being a low-end, you know, top 12 to 15 type of guy, I have a hard time putting him up that high just on that fact. How much rest are they going to give him?
But you know what? I think it's an illusion. Raymond Jacobs has been a waste as an NFL running back. He's not been that good. They signed him to a very friendly contract where is there really a guarantee that Brandon Jacobs, as injury-prone as he is, with an attitude problem that he has, makes it out of the camp as a 49er?
Yeah, I've heard that argument. I would think, I don't know, maybe, are you familiar with the contract? Was there little no upfront money? Is it would be an option they'd have to not even bring him out of camp?
I thought they signed him to like a 1 or 2 year deal worth like $1 million. I mean, it's really, the numbers may be slightly off, but it's really friendly where if they release him, it wouldn't hurt him at all. Even if Brandon Jacobs is there, I don't think Brandon Jacobs cuts into his carries enough that hurts Frank Gore. I think it helps him. It keeps him more refreshed. His problem is he gets so many carries per game. And by the end of the game, he looks tired. He looks like he's going to pass out. Keep him refreshed. You know, the two running back set works for so many people. Frank Gore was the last single running back, it seems like, out there that maybe this is what he needs to return to glory.
Yeah, that could be. He had the 282 carries last year. And, you know, like you said, he did look a little tired. He had the 1,200 yards. He's averaged 4.3 yards a carry. And, you know, and plus, last year was actually the first year that he played all 16 games. And, you know, you almost have to keep him refreshed, or I think you're going to fall into a situation where he's going to be missing 3-4 games.
Frank Gore is, I think, one of the biggest falling running backs around. He was a first-round running back for like 3 years straight. Now people aren't even looking at him until the fifth round. That's valuable.
No, that's stupid value, I think, might be the best way to describe that.
You know, and there was a good little point come over the chat room there. Last year, he only had 17 receptions. And, like, every year before that, 2007, he had over 50 receptions, over 40 in 2008, over 50 in 2009, 46 in 2010. And he only had 17 receptions last year. That's a very good point, and he's a good pass receiver out of the backfield.
And for a team that doesn't like to throw to the wide receiver, I would like to think those numbers would get better this year.
And don't forget, I mean, for the last couple of years, the 49ers were kind of like the new school Baltimore Ravens, where everybody wrote off their offenses and it's just junk. It's the defense that's the moneymaker for them. Now they're putting parts around them. They're not going to play 8-9 in a box. Frank Gore doesn't have to carry 8 guys for a 4-yard gain. I really think this is going to line up to be the best value of the draft.
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue. I don't know in terms of ranking, but yeah, like you said, this is a guy you're getting late fourth, a lot of times in the fifth round, just crazy value. So I'm going to ask you, here's one I have no idea on. I'm going back and forth. I don't know what to do. Can you help me shape up? How do you think the Tampa Bay running back situation shapes out?
You know what? I'm almost with you because when I look at them, I see a bunch of different factors of everybody loves Doug Martin so much.
same way they loved, was it Daniel Thomas of Miami last season? What did he do? Nothing. Rookie
Beating
running
Wells
backs
a couple years ago.
Exactly. When the love goes too much on a rookie running back, I tend to say, you know what, I'm tapping, because it's hardly ever it pans out for a guy like that. And you know what, one, I've seen him not even be drafted in drafts. And I know the big knock about him is his pass protection, but he can run the ball. He still has a pulse. He's still alive. He's still going to be carried. You know, it's not like he slapped a coach's mom and he's gone. He's still there, guys.
Yeah, and to this point, I know it's early. We're just talking mini camps, and we're only a day or two into camp. But thus far, Shiano has been taking the first team reps, and Martin hasn't been seeing them. I think if you're a groom, and especially a rookie, you're going to throw him right out there, give him those first team reps, see how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, you have one there who knows the playbook a little better and has played in the league. I honestly do, as early as it is, think it's telling that Blunt's seeing those first team carries already.
That's what I said. You know, Blunt is going to be the victim of overhype for Martin. And it seems like once one expert, you know, the ESPN guys or the Fox guys get on somebody, it starts rolling and snowball effect. And no matter how good or how bad he's going to be, that snowball is rolled so far down the hill, everybody's automatically going to assume Blunt will get zero carries, he'll sit on the bench, he'll be worthless, and people will pass him up just based on hype on somebody else.
Yeah, I was looking at these ADP numbers. Martin's going, you know, like 4.05, and Blunt's down in the nines. Yeah, I'll take Blunt at 9. I think it's a much better value. I don't think he's going to get the leeway with Shiano. He's going to have to show up on time. You know, they're not going to send a car to go pick him up and make sure he comes to camp on time. And I think he knows that. I mean, he's almost like a little kid. I mean, you can get away with stuff like that, you know, he's going to do it. But he's not going to get away with him. And even Shiano come out and said he's been on time for everything. I think he knows what he needs to do. And I think it, you know, Blunt in the ninth round is a much better value right now than Martin in the fourth.
I've seen him drop it to the 10th and 11th round. Ninth round, I might be a little – I mean, let me ask you guys. You go into the ninth round, do you take Blunt over Hillis?
I think I do. I know what Hillis' role is going to be. I'm going to roll the dice that Blunt's role could be better than what most people, most experts think he is. I think there's definitely more upside with Blunt as far as I'm concerned, assuming Jamal Charles is healthy.
I got no complaints about that. That's a question that everybody's going to ask. And this year, I really think the back end of the running backs are a lot stronger than the middle and the front end.
Yeah, I think especially in terms of when you talk value, and if you're a value drafter, as everyone out there should be, you know, that I think that's where a championship's going to be built. There's so many questions at the top of this running back poll. I mean, we spent 15 minutes arguing over McCoy, Rice, and Foster. There's question marks there. I think it happens every year, but this year more than any, hitting on the right guy late in the draft is going to be the key to to success this season.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to make a little prediction here. I don't know what kind of reception I'll get from that. I'm going Ryan Williams over Beanie Wells.
I don't want any parts of either of them, but if I have to pick one, I'm
saying
Williams.
I think Ryan Williams is going to be the starter in Arizona. I don't think they've been on board with Beanie, you know, even from the high tower days, and now he's got whatever that mystery scope was with the knee. And, you know, I think Ryan Williams is fully recovered, and he's going to be the starter in Arizona.
You know, remember, guys, he was going to be the starter out of camp last season. It was Beanie's Wells' job to lose, and it seemed like he lost it. He goes down, Beanie comes in and was okay, had great numbers when he played, but once again was up to his antics of missing games. Beanie looks like he may start the season on the pup list and miss games right out of camp, and that spells value right out the bat.
Yeah, ain't no question about it. Running out of time, so we'll hit him a little rapid fire here. Here's a guy who I've seen good arguments either way, another guy I'm hung up on. I don't like him. I don't trust him, but a lot of guys starting to buy into Sean Green once again. What are your feelings on Sean Green?
It depends on Tim Tebow's role. If Tim Tebow fills Brad Smith's role as a Wildcat, I don't like him. I take Tim Tebow over Sean Green.
Yeah, I probably, at least in terms of goal line carries, and you have to assume Tebow, they run the Wildcat with Tebow. Why else do you bring him in? And with those crazy New York fans, you can't have a guy like that on the bench and not get him carries. They'll run Rex Ryan right into the Hudson.
Yeah, you said it perfect.
Let's talk about Dennis's guy, Roy Helu.
Dennis's boy, your dog.
Do you trust Roy Helu?
Obviously, he's his number one running back.
You guys are breaking up. No.
Can't hear you.
Here's the thing. I really thought they were not going to bring back Tim Hightower. They obviously did, and now I have questions. Simple as that.
Me too. Shanahan likes Hightower. We made no secret of that last year. And he wasn't doing too awful bad to it until that bad knee injury. And what kind of shape it's in, I'm not sure. I think Helu has value, but you just really have to, you know, temper your expectations and where you draft him on a Shanahan team. It's just like, you know, as we saw, you know, shenanigans.
Shanahanigans or whatever it's called. Yeah. So move on. Here's another guy in a pass-first offense who finally Ryan Grant's going to be gone, going to be the number one guy out there. Much, if any, value for James Starks for you?
No, not really. He can't hold up. He's not one of those guys that can carry the load. He's going to be injury-prone and too small. They'll bring somebody else in there to watch.
And Green will probably get some work there. And, yeah, they may bring somebody else in. You never know.
So I'm moving on. A guy you're very passionate about, Rick, is D'Angelo Williams. I want no part of that mess there with Williams, Stewart, Tolbert, and Cam Newton. While I agree, I don't think they want Newton running the ball as much as he did. I just have a hard time finding a lot of value for D'Angelo Williams or Jonathan Stewart, for that matter.
I like Tolbert better than the three.
Yeah, maybe as a bi-week sort of flex guy, knowing you're probably going to see some touchdowns anyhow.
Touchdown league, definitely. I think it kills Cam Newton's value. Just kills it. Cam Newton's no longer a second-round quarterback.
Really?
Wow. You should have saw the look on his face when he said that.
I'll say this real quick. I know you're running out of time. Week 14, Cam Newton only had one rushing touchdown. Cam Newton only passed for, I think, after week two, over 250 yards twice.
That's true. But,
good point.
Yeah.
Rick.
I don't know. I'm just sophomore slump. I'm not ready to buy that yet. I think that team's starting to come together a little bit. But he's not going to put up ridiculous numbers like that. You're right. And I've always liked D'Angelo Williams, but you cannot get – the value's not there for him. They just don't use him or Stewart. They just don't get enough carries, period.
Yeah, absolutely. At best, an RB3. All right, last one real quick. A guy I think we were remiss in talking about, another kind of coin flip guy to me. We'll just say thumbs up or thumbs down, Steven Jackson this year.
Thumbs up. Wake up. Jeff Fisher has turned every running back into gold. He will revive Steven Jackson into a huge numbers. He's going third, fourth round. He'll put up second round numbers.
Yeah, I think no question about it. How hard to argue with that. So, Dennis, it was awesome having you on. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you plug everything you have going on out there one more time?
Guys, just like iTunes with these guys, head over to Fantasy Sideline Show, rate 5 stars, commit, comment, subscribe, and you'll hear these guys on our show throughout the season also.
Yeah, can't wait. So, hey, thanks a lot for coming on. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Great show. I love doing it.
Dennis, thanks a lot, man.
Okay.
All right, Rick, we're about out of time here, so let's just wrap it up. Thank everybody for listening. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room checking us out. A lot of buzz for a Friday night, so we appreciate it. We will be back Tuesday. Hey, Bills Mafia, your boy at Mr. Deadlier. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. And our boy at Z Bull Smoke will be joining us for an All Bills special on Tuesday.
Mr. Deadlier's Dell. Z Bull is Zan.
Okay? I know Zan.
All right. Dell.
So we'll have about 45 minutes of that and 45 minutes of fantasy talk. So join us then.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thanks.
got a lot of nice comments in there.
Did we?
We're off, right?
Yeah.
Where's the outro song? LOL, they must not have heard it.
They didn't hear it?
Guess not.
Why they wouldn't hear it?
Man, they had a lot of nice comments at least.
Yeah.
So good show, guys. Awesome show, guys. Fun show, guys. Nice show. Enjoy the weekend. Love the show.
Cool. Number. Why don't you call up Dennis real quick? If you do it on your phone, it might be quick. Just to thank him for coming on and see if he can work that Hall of Fame thing in.
Yeah.
I don't want to let that pass. God knows when we'll get a hold of him.
Sure. Of course, we're calling his crummy phone, but
it's all right.
Yeah.
It's off, man.
Well, it's off anyway, so the next one will go through it and shit. Well, you don't have that number. I don't want to call his wife's phone, I guess.
That's not up there anymore.
Yeah. Shit, we had 8 or 10 people. We had like 10 people at one time.
Steady.
Yeah.
We had that Quinlan. He's one of those show guys. I'm surprised Allie went in because she was tweeting me at the beginning of the show, so I thought she was protesting.
What was she tweeting?
She was listening, but she tweeted me. She said, the Foster to McFadden injury comparison is ridiculous. Foster wasn't a factor until late in 2009. Undrafted free agent. And then she said, don't you think that the mistake the Texans Foster made last year was rushing him back too soon from the hamstring? So I'm thinking, all right, she ain't going to put her name on anything Dennis is on.
Yeah.